karma's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head. You better get yourself together. Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, New York Times, ClassicRock.About.com, Rolling Stone magazine, BGO Records, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Instant Karma, is brought to us by John Lennon. We'll be hearing more about and from John Lennon later on in today's program, but first... these trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from www.funtrivia.com. Question number one. Which famous rock star was given the name Winston as a middle name in honor of Winston Churchill? Hint, he was a member of a British rock band in the 1960s. Question number two. Who wrote the 1969 hit song, Give Peace a Chance? Hint, the song was written during the author's bed-in honeymoon, the Amsterdam Hotel. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. In the transition section of today's program, we see the following. This is from BGORecords.com, Today in Rock History, and today is the weekend of October 9 and October 10. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back a half a century ago this weekend, it was Larry Verne at number one with his hit, Please, Mr. Custard. And back in 1961, it was Ray Charles with Hit the Road, Jack. 45 years ago this weekend, it was the Beatles with Yesterday at number one. 40 years ago this weekend, it was Neil Diamond at number one with Cracklin' Rose. In 1971, it was Rod Stewart with Maggie May. And back in 1992, it was R.E.M., Automatic for the People, at number one this weekend. If you were born on October 9th, you share a B-Day with today's featured artist, John Lennon, who would have been 70 years old today. And John Entwistle of The Who, he was born on that day in 1944. Jackson Browne, born on October 8, 1948. And finally, you share a birthday with our today's featured artist's son, Sean Ono Lennon. He was born on the same day as his father, 35 years later in 1975. And if you're born on October 10, you share a birthday with David Lee Roth of Van Halen, 1955. In 1958, on October 10, Tanya Tucker was born. And finally, 1967, October 10, Mike Melanin of the Goo Goo Dolls. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1959, it was Bobby Darin becoming the youngest artist ever to appear at the Copa Room, Sands Hotel in Las Vegas. He was just 21 years old. That same year, Johnny and the Hurricanes debuted on the charts with Red River Rock. Back in 1964 this weekend, it was the Shangri-Las hitting the charts with Leader of the Pack, their only number one hit. And back in 1966, John Lennon meets Yoko Ono for the first time. And 40 years ago this weekend, it was Smokey Robinson and the Miracles hitting the charts with Tears of a Clown on its way to becoming number one. Back in 1973 this weekend, it was Elvis and Priscilla and Getting Divorced. And back in 1979, it was L.A. declares a Fleetwood Mac Day, and the band gets a star on the Hollywood Boulevard Walk of Fame. Finally, back in 1980, John Lennon releases Just Like Starting Over to celebrate his 40th B-Day. We'll be right back. This next article comes to us from Stephen King from Entertainment Weekly on the 3rd of September 2010, entitled, My 2010 Hits and Misses. To paraphrase Forrest Gump, pop culture is like a box of chocolates, although not always as sweet. Though it's been years, I still remember how shocked I was when, after taking my wife to see Forrest Gump, she told me she hadn't liked it. I couldn't understand how it was possible to dislike such a good-natured movie. Her response was that Gump was based on a faulty assumption. He says life is like a box of chocolates, and you never know what you're going to get, but everything in a Whitman sampler is sweet, she paused, then added, that is not my experience of life. It's not mine either, actually, and I never looked at Forrest Gump the same way. Maybe my dear one would have liked it better if Forrest had said, life is like a box of surprises, many of which are chocolates. I certainly feel that way about pop culture. Sometimes when you reach into the box, you get your fingers snapped by a mousetrap, but often you get something sweet. Here are a few notable things I've pulled so far from my 2010 box of surprises. Eminem's recovery album, Chocolate. I started off thinking Eminem was a flash in the pan, a kind of hip-hop Hanson brother. How wrong I was. Recovery is sometimes funny, sometimes terrible, always painfully honest. The matching of Eminem and Rihanna on Love the Way You Lie is pure genius. Not Afraid is pretty great, too. The article then skips down with about 7 chocolate notices and 2 mousetrap reviews and ends with this. California Girls by Katy Perry is a mousetrap. She's a terrific singer and gorgeous, but I found this disappointing. Isn't it every summer single you've ever heard, only less hummable? Snoop's cool, though, I gotta admit. And the EW Must List, that's chocolate, always. More chocolates than mousetraps, did you notice? That's what keeps me coming back. And the best thing of all, the box is never empty. Well, this next article is called A Catchy Pop Shout-Along by David Menconi, published in newsandobserver.com on the 25th of July, 2010. Raleigh, there's a lot more to fronting a band than just standing at a microphone and singing. You're also serving as master of ceremonies, simultaneously channeling and embodying a crowd's feelings and desires as an idealized peer. And crowds are multicellular beasts that can reward you or turn on you if you don't tend to those desires with just the right vibe. Hayley Williams, flaming-haired frontwoman of the Tennessee rock band Paramore, understands this better than most. Williams is a very conversational singer with a style that sounds like animated talking sped up and set to dramatic emo pop arrangements. No wonder kids relate to and sing along with her tales of every teen angst. On stage during a steamy Friday night at the downtown Raleigh Amphitheater, Williams was in a constant kinetic motion, and she seemed to get the fact that she was just one voice speaking for many. Introducing an unplugged segment, which the band played from a couch on stage, Williams said they were going to turn the volume down to acoustic levels, the better to hear you sing. They offered up Where the Lines Overlap. I've got a feeling if I sang this loud enough, you would sing it back to me. And that's exactly what happened. Every song turned into a shout-along with thousands of young voices singing loudly enough that it was often difficult to hear Williams. Rather than try to fight that, Williams encouraged it, holding out the microphone to encourage the vocalizing. Pete Seeger's got nothing on her. Friday's show was opening night of the Honda Civic Tour, and Paramore was the last of 4 bands to play. Among the opening acts, Canadian folk rockers Tegan and Sarah made the strongest impression. They're identical twin sisters who started out as a winsome folk duo, but they've added electric instruments and impressive pop sense to their repertoire in recent years. They were terrific, especially on the driving Hell. Paramore's headline set began with the band playing from behind a curtain, which dropped as they started into the staccato riffing of Misery Business. Paramore's oldest member is only 25, but they're technically sharp and savvy beyond their years. Friday's show featured first-rate dynamics throughout, an array of catchy pop tunes. It's not reinventing the wheel, but they're giving it a mighty good spin. As Williams concluded on Looking Up, we're just getting started. This next article is from www.yomag.net. That's Y-O-M-A-G.net. European e-magazine and internet magazine buy-in for young people from all over the world. Yeah, this was published on the 29th of August, 2010. Music and health. Are those two notions connected? This is written by Prebor on May 21. 2009. Music, a magic word which affects all of us. Some people listen to music very often, some people only rarely, and some people have music as a job. Music has developed for a very long time, so nowadays we know many different kinds of music, and everybody can find his own style. Nevertheless, have you ever thought if there is a connection between music and health? I think that the answer is certainly yes. In my opinion, scientists will always invent new ways of enjoying music, and new music players, for example, MP3 and MP4 players, have been developed lately. Of course, the development of technology can't be stopped. It is a never-ending process, which I believe is a natural attribute of mankind. But how deeply have people thought of the effect that technology can have on our health? Can listening to music on MP3 players damage our hearing? I was interested in this topic because a lot of people, including me, own an MP3 player. Every day I can see a lot of other people with headphones in their ears. That is why I began to search on the internet to find some information. I discovered that a person can lose their hearing when they regularly listen to music on an MP3 or MP4 player, which is louder than 90 decibels. The maximum volume of MP3 player varies depending on the make of the MP3 player. However, the volume on some players can even reach to 120 decibels, which scientists compare with intense rock music or a plane taken off. To have some idea about sound intensity, I'm including the scale of some sounds and their volume. Decibel level of some common sounds, for example, 30 decibels is a whisper, a reading room in a library. 80 decibels is ringing of alarm clock. 110 decibels is a small plane or rock music. And 150 decibels, the loudest moments of a rock concert. According to this list, everybody who listens to their MP3 player at a maximum volume risks the threat of damaging their hearing. That list can make us think of hearing injury. And what are the symptoms of damaged hearing? An unpleasant droning in your ears and a rustle. The famous composer Ludwig van Beethoven is a good example of someone who suffered from damaged hearing. Of course, an MP3 player didn't play any role there. He suffered from a very serious form of ear rustle. Although doctors tried to help him, his hearing was getting worse, and in the end he became completely deaf. It's fascinating to think, however, that he still managed to compose. Maybe you're asking yourself now, how can you save your hearing? The answer is easy. At first, you have to listen to music on your MP3 player 1 hour a day at a level of about 60 to 70 decibels at most. Secondly, you should be careful what kind of headphones you have. Small headphones sit more closely to the eardrum, so the probability of damage is higher. And finally, the most important thing, when you listen to music on an MP3 player and you can't hear somebody who's speaking to you, then your MP3 player is too loud. I would also say that listening to music on MP3 players may not just injure your hearing. In fact, a quite tragic situation can easily happen. Some people go cycling or inline skating. They often listen to music when riding, believing it's just pleasant fun. Nevertheless, it's very dangerous. They can very easily lose attention and car might injure or kill them. On the other hand, music also helps us. For example, it's a good therapy for blind people. They can see nothing, so that's why music helps them to imagine the world around them. In addition to that, there are several reasons for saying that music is magic. Music is sweet. Music is the wine that fills the cup of silence, the English composer and producer Robert Fripp said, and I absolutely agree with him. In conclusion, I would like to say that your health is the most important gift you have. It would be a pity if we damaged our hearing only on account of carelessness when listening to music. So what do you know about today's featured artist, John Lennon? Well, this Rolling Stone magazine by Mark Kemp on May 27, 2010, biography, says that John Lennon was the most iconic Beatle. He was the group's most committed rock and roller, its social conscience, and its slyest verbal wit. With the Beatles, he wrote or co-wrote dozens of classics, from She Loves You to Come Together, and delivered many of them with a cutting, humane, and distinct voice that would make him one of the greatest singers rock has ever produced. Lennon's brutally confessional solo work and his political activism were a huge influence on subsequent generations of singers, songwriters, and social reformers. After the Beatles' breakup, he and wife Yoko Ono recorded together and separately, striving to break taboos and to be ruthlessly publicly honest in their music and public performances. When Lennon was murdered on December 8, 1980, he seemed on the verge of a new, more optimistic phase. In the years since, his image has become a staple of t-shirts and posters, used by rock fans and activists alike as a symbol of peace. He was born on October 9, 1940. Like the other three Beatles, Lennon grew up in a working-class family in Liverpool. His parents, Julia and Fred, separated before he was two. Lennon saw his father only twice in the next 20 years, and Lennon went on to live with his mother's sister, Mimi Smith. When Lennon was 17, his mother was killed by a bus. He attended Liverpool's Dovedale Primary School and later the Quarry Bank High School, which supplied the name for his first band, a skiffle group called the Quarrymen, which he started in 1955. In the summer of 1956, he met Paul McCartney, and they began writing songs together and forming groups, the last of which was the Beatles. As half of the official songwriting team, Lennon-McCartney, Lennon himself penned some of the Beatles' most well-known songs over the next decade, including A Hard Day's Night, Help, Nowhere Man, Norwegian Wood, This Bird Has Flown, Ticket to Ride, All You Need Is Love, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, Strawberry Fields Forever, Across the Universe, Revolution, and Come Together.
I told you about strawberry fields. You know the place where nothing is real. Well, here's another place you can go.
Lennon, who had wanted to quit the Beatles just before the band's official breakup in 1970, began his career apart from the band in 1968 when he and Ono recorded Two Virgins. It was an album of avant-garde music, most notable for its controversial cover featuring the couple fully nude. The album was shipped in plain brown wrapper. He would go on to record more than half of his solo albums with Ono. Lennon and Ono had been corresponding since he met the artist at a 1966 showing of her work at the Indica Art Gallery in London. The article skips down. While he regarded his relationship with Ono as the most important thing in his life, the couple's inseparability and Ono's influence over Lennon would be a source of great tension among the Beatles, then in their last days. On March 20, 1969, Lennon and Ono were married in Gibraltar. For their honeymoon, they held their first bed-in for peace in the presidential suite of the Amsterdam Hilton. The peace movement was the first of several political causes the couple would take up over the years, but it was the one that generated the most publicity. On April 22nd, Lenin changed his middle name to Ono. The article skips down. He announced to the Beatles that he was quitting the group in 1969, but it was agreed among them that no public statement would be made until after pending lawsuits involving the band's Apple record label and manager Alan Klein were resolved. Article skips down. In April 1970, McCartney, in a move that Lennon saw as an act of betrayal, announced his departure from the Beatles and released a solo album. From that point on, if not earlier, Ono replaced McCartney as Lennon's main collaborator. The Beatles were no more. Article skips down. Over the next 2 years, Lennon released Mind Games, number 9, and Walls and Bridges, number 1, which yielded his only solo number 1 hit, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, recorded with Elton John. The article skips down. On October 9, 1975, Lennon's 35th birthday, Ono gave birth to Sean Ono Lennon. Beginning in 1975, Lennon devoted his full attention to his new son and his marriage, which had survived an 18-month separation from October 73 to March 75. For the next 5 years, he lived at home in nearly total seclusion, taking care of Sean while Ono ran the couple's financial affairs. Not until the publication of a full-page newspaper ad in May 1979, explaining his and Ono's activities, did Lennon even hint at a possible return to recording. In September 1980, Lennon and Ono signed a contract with the newly formed Geffen Records, and on November 15th, they released Double Fantasy, number 1 in 1980. A series of revealing interviews were published, just like Starting Over, hit number 1, and there was talk of a possible world tour. But on December 8, 1980, Lennon returning with Ono to their Dakota apartment on New York City's Upper West Side was shot 7 times by Mark David Chapman, a 25-year-old drifter and Beatles fan to whom Lennon had given an autograph a few hours earlier. Lennon was pronounced dead on arrival at Roosevelt Hospital. On December 14, at Ono's request, a 10-minute silent vigil was held at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, in which millions around the world participated. Lennon's remains were cremated in Hartsdale, New York. At the time of his death, he was holding in his hand a tape of Ono's Walking on Thin Ice. 2 other singles from Double Fantasy were hits, Woman, number 2 in 1981, and Watching the Wheels, number 10 in 1981. Double Fantasy won the 1981 Grammy for Album of the Year.
Say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. They give me all kinds of warnings, save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well they look at me kind of strange. But surely you're not happy. Now you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy.
On September 30th, 1988, Lennon received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It is located near the Capitol Recording Building. On March 21, 1994, Ono, Sean Lennon, and Julian Lennon were present as New York City Mayor Ed Koch officially opened Strawberry Fields, a triangular section of Central Park dedicated to Lennon's memory and filled with plants, rocks, and other objects that Ono had solicited from heads of state around the world.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
Look at me.
Lennon's music has been anthologized heavily since his death, most notably on the 4-CD Lennon in 1990, an anthology, a 1998 box set of his home recordings, demos, and radio appearances. In 2007, Lennon's solo catalog was the first Beatles-related music to be sold digitally on iTunes. In 2000, a number of events commemorated Lennon's 60th birthday and the 20th anniversary of his death, including a major exhibition on Lennon and his work at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum. In 2002, Lennon's hometown renamed its airport Liverpool John Lennon Airport. Throughout the first decade of the 2000s, several countries erected monuments honoring Lennon, including a sculpture in the John Lennon Park in Havana, Cuba, and the Imagine Peace Tower in Reykjavik, Iceland.
What can I do for you? What can I do for you? Here I am.
In contemporary rock news, we see this article by Leah Greenblatt. It's a review of Maroon 5's latest album, Hands All Over. Rock music, that bastion of the angstful and testosterone, has seldom had a frontman as unconcerned with grit or subtext as Adam Levine. He is the genre's light, funky Romeo, a man whose musical topics of interest seem to begin and end with sexy ladies, loving them, losing them, and then, invariably, finding a rubber band bass line to ride on to the next one. Much has been made of Hands All Over, the band's third studio album in 8 years, being produced by Mutt Lange, the reclusive, choosy maestro behind multi-platinum monsters like Def Leppard's Hysteria and then-wife Shania Twain's Come On Over. But Leppard's spotted title track aside, there's not much evidence of his impact here. First single and album opener Misery is boilerplate maroon, a falsettoed lark whose tiggerish bounce blithely defies its tormented title. Levine's romantic roundelay trundles on, though airy disco boogie, give a little more, get back in my life, retro funk squiggle, stutter, don't know nothing, and trainish mid-range ballandry, never gonna leave this bed, and how. Though the band's obvious influences, Hall and Oaks, early Prince, serve them well enough, what shadows hands most is its own creator's earlier, more immediate stuff. Whatever havoc the titular minx of 2002's Songs About Jane wreaked, at least it yielded this love. Hands, competent and studio sleek as it is, too often begs for a fresher muse. Given a C+ by Leah Greenblatt, and she says, download this, I Can't Lie.
My world just feels so cold, and you find yourself walking down the wrong side of the road. Oh, I can't lie, you're on my mind, stuck inside my head. I wanna feel your heartbeat for me instead. Yeah, I just got so much in.
So how'd you do on the trivia questions from today? Which famous rock star was given the name Winston as a middle name in honor of Winston Churchill? That was John Winston Lennon of the Beatles. He later changed that to Ono. Now, question number two, who wrote the 1969 hit song Give Peace a Chance? That was sort of a trick question because only John Lennon wrote it, but because of an agreement signed a decade before its 1969 copyright, both Lennon and McCartney are credited as authors.
Imagine all the people living life in peace.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.
Imagine no possessions.
That's right.
I wonder if you can.